This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. We hear certain buzzwords, and they're used a lot to sell things like food, products, services, and to even discredit people. Author Lauren Cooper is going to join me to explain the history of buzzwords and why they're used so much. Thanks for joining me, Lauren.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the chunk of things, could you tell me what exactly is a buzzword?
There's a couple of different definitions around buzzwords. There are buzzwords in advertising, which are used basically to provide instant recognition and also usually have an emotional resonance attached. The origin of the term actually is from academia, and this is where the negative connotation gets associated with buzzwords, and that's the use of words that are associated with like specific jargon. So there's actually, you'll see references in like Dilbert and popular culture around buzzword bingo, and this is kind of the danger of the use of specific buzzwords, is that they may become overused and they may lose their resonance, as it were, for the audience.
With that said, does it change like buzzwords from year to year or from time to time?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of things that drive buzzwords, but usually the things that drive buzzwords are innovation or new disciplines that perhaps have been around but gain insights. So there's a lot of, language is always, you know, an ever-changing beast. Now the interesting thing is that if you look at it from, again, kind of a marketing perspective, one of the things that you see is that there are certain sort of uses of words that do sort of remain over time, specifically in business. And those words are words that are really tied to concrete things. So a buzzword or buzz phrase even can be very specific, but then as it goes away from its specificity. Let's take, for example, the term win-win. And the original use of that is associated with Stephen Covey, and he was talking about sets of strategies in discussions. The problem is that unless you're talking with someone that's familiar with Stephen Covey and his usage's grid around decision matrices, you hear win-win and you tend to bounce off because it's become so commonly used that the meaning has lost specificity and it's become smeared. Now, there are things in that, for example, refer to specific experience, like love or attachment, specific emotion, pleasure, those kinds of things. Those concrete words, when used, and used well, tend to stay over time. So you see those things kind of recur in language.
That kind of reminds me of the word organic. You hear that in headlines, you see it a lot, and then you hear it for marketing. Oh, you want to get an organic audience. Then you hear it in products, like, oh, it's an organic shirt. It seems to be a kind of a safe word. Do you think organic is going to stay around and have the same meaning as time goes on?
Well, it depends. I mean, you already, you know, you've seen, so organic, let's take it in the food movement, for example. So organic, you know, originally was associated with a move toward, locally sourced foods that are grown in a very natural way and very kind of contrary to agribusiness. What happened is that organic got attached to certification. It became sort of part of the establishment. So if you meet certain requirements, which do not necessarily have locally sourced aspects to it, and which may be indeed become a very large agribusiness, but as long as you meet those requirements by a government standard, you can put organic as a label on your food. And so what was once sort of a banner around specific movement has shifted. And so it's now meeting certain guidelines by the government. And that takes some of the emphasis out of it. And so it's the same thing, I think, as organic is used in some of those other contexts you talk about. It depends on how much connotation stays associated with it and gives it that punch. And that's what happens with buzzwords, is they either become smeared or they tend to shift off-center. If they're carrying that connotation, then they slip into cliche instead of, you know, having the power of a specific reference.
When you think of buzzwords, you can't help but think of clickbaity headlines. And some of the headlines that I like the most, that I never click on because it's probably malware, is, you know, this truth could save your life. Or, you know, discover this life-changing secret today. How can you tell when something's real and something is just clickbait? Because they're using these buzzwords a bit, you know, haphazardly.
Right, absolutely. And the reason that, you know, as you said, you know, when you were talking about it, you're tempted, but you also recognize them as clickbait. But the fact that you're tempted is why that they're using those phrases. Those are things that appeal, you know, at the gut. I mean, at the gut level or at the hindbrain level where we tend to make our fast decisions as opposed to, say, our more deliberate or what decisions, what William James called directed thinking. At that level, you tend to be focused around things like survival. And so when you hear phrases like that, your gut sort of sits up and takes notice. But then because of the fact that we live in the age that we live, we're fairly well immersed in what looks real and what looks doesn't. And so when people are using those kinds of buzzword hooks, they're really playing a percentages game. It's the same, in a lot of ways, it really grew, from my perspective, out of the social engineering that was developed by hackers back in the origins of hacking, which probably around the 80s, 90s is where the sophistication started coming up. And that is using behavioral aspects in messages to pull out information that people otherwise would not share. And it's the same thing with clickbait or marketing. You ordinarily would not necessarily go to that product, but if they can hook you with that emotional investment, then you will go to that product. And that's that percentages game they're playing. It's a kind of social engineering.
You know, you're saying they kind of hook you emotionally. They want you emotionally invested. Doesn't that hurt more than anything? Once I recognize that your product or your company or your brand is using those type of tactics, wouldn't that just tell the customer, the consumer, that, hey, they're being a bit manipulative here. I better be wary of their product. Or does that never happen?
So there are certain people who, you know, recognize it immediately. Or they go in and they're like, ah, you know, I really made a mistake going there. You know, again, the sort of society we live in, legitimate products have advertisers that are using similar devices, but they're not necessarily using them in such an invested way. So at the far end of the extreme, you have the value of brand, and brand actually can sort of quietly speak for itself. And those are usually really, really high-end brands. You don't need to have a lot of advertisement out there around a Rolls Royce. The Rolls Royce sells itself. It's a symbol in and of itself by the nature of what it is. But in between those two spectrums, you have advertising. And in advertising, the goal is really to bypass the forebrain and to really get you by the hindbrain. And so that emotional content is a spectrum. It's there even in legitimate advertising. And so the amount that backs off associated the technique itself, probably not. It's more disappointment, I think, for the people that get hooked and then they go in and recognize they get hooked. Then they will, you know, dismiss that product out of hand. And that is the danger that you run, because if your percentages, you know, if you overshoot your percentages, if you don't deliver, then eventually, you know, your product's not going to sell. You're going to have to rebrand or engage in some other kind of manipulation of your audience in order to get there.
As a consumer, as a customer, as just the average reader, are there any buzzwords that you can trust that you can see in a headline and say, okay, you know, that's not that bad? Or is it about the usage of the word?
It's about the usage of the word. It's about context. And I think that's true in, as an average reader, I think it's true in the news. I think it's true in advertising. We look at the world basically as a set of sort of internalized stories. And the interesting thing is that words with sensory aspects, there's been neurological research that words with sensory aspects actually engage the parts of the brain are associated with that sense. So when you read about something salty, the part of your brain that's dealing with the sense of taste actually activates and lights up. Those words hook you in, but the context is what either keeps you there or where you bounce off, where you are internalized into the message that's being delivered, particularly if that message tends to already agree with the internal framework that you've got established, or it teaches you something and then, you know, you can validate that and go out and, you know, and potentially that expands, you know, your horizon. The first time, you know, for example, that people started talking about texting, which is, 15, 20 years ago, you know, there were arguments over whether or not those kinds of things, you know, it was appropriate to verbalize all of these words, and there were jokes about that. Those shifts in language are much less associated with the specific words, even though those words tie directly into our kind of neurological makeup, as much as they are into the context. So texting now is just a natural word that's used. It has meaning in a way that when it was initially, you know, used, it didn't necessarily carry.
Now, we've talked about buzzwords and headlines and advertising, marketing, products. What about using in everyday life? Would it be appropriate for me to use some buzzwords on my mother? Like, hey, mom, you know, don't open that drawer if you want to survive the night. I don't know. That was scary.
Right, right.
It's like, but I'm just thinking, like, should I be using buzzwords? Should I be using them, like, on my resume? If you don't hire me, your company is going to go belly up tomorrow. I mean, is it smart to, or is this just something that the normal person can't do?
I think, you know, I guess you can tailor it to your style. I think it's risky, particularly on a resume, but at the same time, there are certain words that are in and out of vogue. I've seen articles that will coach people, you know, to present their experience in particular ways. So, you know, the use of the word leadership, for example. That's not quite as outre as, you know, a comet is going to destroy your company if I'm not there to avert it, obviously. But certain words, you know, managers will recognize. They'll you know, ownership, those kinds of things, and how to enter into your resume. But rather than buzzwords, because, again, the danger that you have is that the article you read that's guiding you to do that be a little dated would be to be familiar with the sort of lexicon of the industry that you're in, and then to speak very directly, very powerfully, to use the language in everyday life in a way that's very concrete. Because remember, as I, you know, talked about that research, it's difficult to speak in concrete terms on a regular basis. So I think they have a place. For example, you'll see articles about resumes and catching specific terminology on a resume. But I think there's a certain danger to that. So specificity tends to be far more beneficial and powerful. As I noted, when you engage anything and refer to anything verbally that is concrete, when people read that or hear that, it actually engages the sensory parts of the brain. And you'll notice that in a sort of freak conversation like humor, those things tend to be very specific and very concrete. And so that's always your most powerful use of language. However, being familiar with the jargon of an industry, for example, when you are interviewing for a job or when you're putting together a resume, can be a very helpful tool. However, it should be something that's natural, or you run the risk of either being dated or using the terminology incorrectly. So in terms of, you know, buzzwords falling flat, the difference between idiom and cliche, perhaps. So it's okay to use them, just be aware of the risk.
You know, it's funny you talk about things being dated, because when I was looking up, like, oh, what's some, like, buzzwords? What's a good example? I found articles that went as far back as, like, 2008 that were on, I think, the second page of Google search. And how dated can it get? Like, how bad can it hurt you? I mean, even though I'm sure I'm not the only person that's Googling buzzwords. So, and this article's from 2009. Everybody's clicking on it, so it must still be relevant, right?
There's a certain amount of relevance, but is the relevance actually in those words, or is the relevance more associated with the topic itself around buzzwords? I actually have been in the office with a particular manager who was notorious for his use of current business jargon, and I've had people surreptitiously passing out buzzword bingo charts, and then, you know, the attention at that point is no longer, you know, you've lost meaning, you've lost your audience, right? You've become sort of a butt of a joke without even being aware of it. So there is a danger, I think, to overuse of buzzwords, and again, that, as I referred to earlier, the fact that as you get away from specific meaning and the meaning becomes smeared, what can happen is that they just lose their power, and you risk also losing your audience, because if you're using buzzwords that are too old, say a portmanteau word out of the 19th century like absquatulate, very few people are going to know that. Buzzwords are an excellent example of the gradual living evolution of language. And so, like in all cases, language shifts and evolves over time and is reflective basically of the experience of the speakers. And that's exactly what you get into when, you know, you're using, you're risking using a particular buzzword. How well does it, you know, reflect the experience of the folks in your conversation or your audience?
I like how you say buzzwords is an evolution of a language. To me, I can't help but think of, like, fake news. That in itself, that those two words together, it's a buzzword. And I start wondering, how ethical is it to use these buzzwords? Are buzzwords on that cusp of it's right or it's kind of wrong?
I think the usage is where the ethics is, from my mind. So if you're using it for clarification to add power to, you know, have a specific reference, that's one thing. If your intent in using it is to deceive your audience, or your intent in using it is propaganda, if your intent in using it is to influence or persuade to your own benefit, then those things are obviously ethically compromised. But it's not necessarily the words themselves in that particular case. It really is the context and the intent behind using them.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
I'm online. The book that's most relevant to this, the nonfiction book, would be online, available in print and in Kindle at Amazon, and that is The Chain of Ghosts, and that's Resonance in Language, Story, and a Brain. My most recent book is actually a science fiction fantasy book from Wet Red Hand Press called Crosstown. It's gotten a lot of very favorable reviews since its release late last year. And it's available worldwide in pretty much any storefront. And then I'm also at www.laurencooper.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to wgnradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.